welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. Today, we are in southwest London with a man whose journey hasn't been straightforward. A serious crash at the start of his career, resulting in a five-day coma. He's an Olympic medalist and the first ever Brit to win a medal in BMX. He recently claimed victory down under in the BMX World Cup. He's known as the Prince of Peckham. Kai White, welcome. Hey. To the Monday Mile podcast.
How you doing? Thank you for having me.
We're here. We've finally made it. We've been talking about doing this podcast for a while.
Yeah.
But for me, the timing of this works very well because you are about to jet off to Paris.
Yeah.
First of all, congratulations. You are en route to your second Olympic Games.
I know. I honestly can't believe it. The first one was obviously COVID, and getting there was bit crazy and a bit hectic, but yeah, I'm 24 and I'm about to go to my next Olympics, so I can't wait.
Does that feel surreal as a lad from Peckham growing up to be en route to your second Games? You sort of say it quite casually and you've got a real humble way about you.
I would like to say yes, because I always believed that from when I started BMX that this is the route I want to go down and this is where I want to make it to and get to Olympics. And I'll say no because, as you said, I'm from Peckham. It's not a place where Olympians are born and bred. I'm excited to go and, yeah.
But you have already changed that narrative.
Yeah.
Talk me through Tokyo 2020.
So for me, Tokyo was actually a bit of a dodgy road. Before we even got to even get on the plane and get out there, we had to do the COVID tests. You had to do a 24-hour, 48-hour, and a 72-hour. And my 48-hour didn't make it to the postal.
No.
So whether the postal man lost it or they lost it en route, it didn't make it. I don't know how they do it with the Winter Olympics, but for us, they gave us our own driver and we drove down. Well, I didn't drive down, but the other guys got to drive down in a van with champagne and the luxury ride to the airport. I had to drive down at 4 o'clock in the morning by myself, do a test, and hopefully it came back negative before I got on the flight. And I sat in the airport for about 7 hours just waiting by myself. That was the start of my Olympics.
What a surreal situation to be in, knowing that your Olympic destiny was at the mercy of a test result.
Yeah.
So, and it's not like it's a physical test either.
No.
Like the test of qualifying.
Yeah.
That in itself is quite a grueling process. Going into Tokyo, did you believe you were a contender?
I'll say yes and no. I'll say yes because I've raced these guys plenty of times, years in, years out, before it and after it. And going in, I knew I was in good shape. I felt good. I've never been to Olympics and most of the guys that were there have already been to Olympics. So for me, it was like, I wasn't putting more pressure on myself, but I was more enjoying the experience and getting selected and actually going to Olympics then. Actually focusing on that I'm there to race. And then I say yes because, as I said, I've raced these guys plenty of times. I know I can beat them, and yeah, I got second, so yeah.
Unreal. At your first Olympic Games,
yeah.
You're the first ever British athlete to win a medal in BMX racing. When you're out there, you're in the final. Take me to the moment that you're on that start line. You're at your first ever Olympic finals.
It was a long walk up the back of the hill. And at the back of the hill, I was just saying to myself, no, there's no pressure. It was kind of like a whole little story in my own head to myself. I'm the youngest here. I was 21. Everyone else was 25 and above. It's my first Olympics. Some of these guys, it's their last Olympics. They've never won a medal, so I think they have more pressure. I need to bring it home for myself, for my family, and for Peckham. There was so many things I was just saying to myself, I need to do this, I need to do that. And it all just came down to getting on the gate, tighten up your gloves, tighten up your helmet, and getting ready for the race.
And as soon as... Did it feel different putting on your helmet in that moment to any other race you'd been in before?
Yes. I was so focused and eager to get going. I know it sounds a bit crazy, but for me, I was kind of prepared to lay my life on the line on the start gate to try and get a medal. It happened and I didn't lose my life, so yeah.
And in BMX, quite literally anything can happen.
Yep.
It's fast, it's dangerous, it's explosive. You could come out the gate last
and still win.
And there's a big bailout.
Yep.
Well, yeah. And everyone wins. Take me through that Olympic final.
This final actually haunts me because I could have won. which is, I don't know how to explain it, but at the time, when I came across finish line, I was angry and I was happy. I came out of the gate the day before in competition, and that day, I hadn't won a race, and I was scraping through. I was starting last and scraping through qualifiers because my starts wasn't great at all. And in the final, before I went up to the start hill, I said to my coach, I'm just going to change the way I start. I've been starting last anyway, so if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. So I changed the way I started, and I absolutely got a blinder. And I was in front. There was a jump that the whole field was struggling with in practice and in competition. The jump made you go too far, and you have to, in BMX, you have to land the backsides to get good speed. And I've pedaled right up to it, and I've just gone way too far. So I overdone it while in the lead, and then the guy from the outside went into in front. I'd have stayed in second the whole way around. And yeah, I was, as soon as I crossed finish line, I literally was like, I was shouting in excitement. So I won a medal, but then I was like,
I could have won.
I could have won a gold medal.
But at the same time, going into this next game,
yeah,
maybe that gives you a different grit that you wouldn't have had.
Exactly. So as much as I would love to get another medal, the only kind of medal I want now is the gold one. It is BMX, so obviously, yeah, anything can happen, and it's very hard to say I'm going to get another medal. But if I was to get another one, it has to be the gold one. So we'll see.
Gold or we're not interested.
Yeah, yeah, literally.
So you're going all in.
All in.
Are you fearful of that?
No. I always say to like younger riders or riders coming up, if you're scared of getting on and crashing or putting your all and it doesn't go right, then you shouldn't do BMX or any sport really, because, well, for me, especially BMX, because if you're scared of crashing, it's contact sport. It's like being a boxer and getting scared of getting hit. It doesn't make sense. So yeah, for me, I just had to put everything together and yeah, just give it all my all.
For those people that are new to the sport of BMX, how would you describe it?
Adrenaline, thrilling, scary, and I'll say exciting. Exciting to watch.
And if you were to tell someone for the first time that they should tune in to watch you in Paris,
yeah,
why should they be watching?
So I'm going to put on a show. I'm going to put on a show for
everyone. Too right.
Yeah.
Now take me back to the start, because as I believe, BMX racing is in the blood.
Yeah. So it started off with Trey, my old brother. He started first. He went down to Brockwell Park and met CK, and then CK introduced him to BMX. Trey started, my dad bought him again. My dad started, and then my oldest brother started, and then my older sister started. And wow. Then I was what, maybe two at this time. As soon as I was old enough, I started. And then when my little sister was old enough, she started. So yeah, it's been in the family for, what, how old am I? Over 20 years now. So
that is so special. And do you think having brothers and sisters in the game kept you on your toes and allowed you to progress to the level that you are today?
100%. So both my brothers have been on a GB team also. Daniel, he was the first one. Trey, he was the second. And then I was the third. Daniel, he's more of like the crazy brother. So he was the person I got in trouble all the time, and he ended up getting kicked off. Trey's more the smart brother, where he gets his work done and keeps everyone happy, so he's happy, I guess. I'm a mixture of both. So I'm a bit of a crazy one and a smart one at the same time, but
I suppose that you put the two
together and yeah, gelled it together and it became better than him.
It's conducive to being a successful athlete.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny because people often say to me, oh, you must have had a few screws loose to do what you did.
Yeah.
That being snowboarding.
Yeah.
And I don't see it like that. I see it very much as risk assessed.
Yeah.
What do you say when someone says that to you? Oh, mate, you must have a few screws loose.
I mean, I get paid to ride a bike. Why would you not do it? It's, when you're good at something, you see it in a different light, and other people can't imagine doing what you're doing because maybe they can't do it, or it amazes them how you can do something so crazy. But at the end of the day, it's like for you as well, it's what you're good at, it's what you love doing. So yeah, just get on with it and do it.
You mentioned the two sides to your personality.
Yeah.
So the slightly rogue, wild side. Talk to me about how BMX saved you during your childhood?
So I'll say, obviously, being from Peckham, it's easy to go down the wrong route. You have, to put it in a weird way, you have gangsters who make more money than your parents working a 9-to-5. So you look at them as like, oh, that's easy money. Why can't I do it? And obviously, they do horrible things to get it that way. Whereas, yeah, it's working a 9-to-5, nothing wrong with it. It's, you go into work, get your stuff done, and go home and you get paid. And you go about the stuff the right way instead of trying to make a quick buck. BMX, I say, when people were out going to parties and having fun and causing trouble, I was training. I think that's what kept me on the right path. And also my dad, he's a like sport fanatic. Like, he's done golf, tennis, running, football. He's done everything under the sun. My dad would have kept us on the straight and narrow regardless.
Your dad clearly has had such a positive impact on your career.
Yeah.
He was also your coach.
Yeah, yeah.
For part of it. Is that surreal to have your father as someone guiding that path as an athlete?
I actually hated it. I really hated it. This is actually really bad to say as an athlete, but I hate training. I hate it so much. I hate waking up in the morning and getting myself ready and prepared mentally to go into training. But once I'm there, I put 110% in. But actually getting up and doing it, that's the hard part for me. But yeah, as I said, once I'm there, everything's done right and it's done 100%. With my dad being the coach, there's no excuses when I was younger. There's no escaping it. My dad, I feel a bit unwell. Well, you wasn't unwell 20 minutes ago. Now we've got to go training. You know? Why are you unwell now? It was obviously great to have that because I've obviously gotten where I've gotten because he pushed me and because
was
he...
Was it a workhorse?
Yes and no. He believes if you just put the work in, then it will happen. But because he was a coach, he just had to turn up just in case other people had to turn up. So when it was snowing or raining, he would say, oh, we're going to the track, we're going training now. I'm like, oh, Dad, no one's going to turn up, though. It's snowing. And if one person turned up, he's like, see, I told you, I have to be here. I'm like, but they're not going to stay the whole time. It's, yeah, but he got us to the track and he made us do what we needed to do. And yeah, he's played a big part.
And now that discipline to show up to training is on you. Do you have a different relationship with it?
It's like, so I live in Manchester now and everyone lives in back in London. I don't really get to see my family or my dad much. So yeah, I guess all the responsibility is on me now to make sure I'm getting up and eating breakfast and getting to training on time. And it's the same as any kid when they grow up, just different. They're going to work, I guess.
It is surreal to be an athlete. The day job is to wake up and train.
Yeah.
It's quite surreal when that pressure is removed and then you have to reconnect and find that inner desire and purpose for it. What does your routine look like in the lead up to the games? And does it change at all in this next 2 or 3 weeks?
So yeah, my routine has changed completely from last week to this week. So this week, it will start off with heavy gym on a Monday morning. When I mean heavy, like to the point where you're sweating, you're dripping and can't really breathe.
Go on, give us a little inkling. People like to know the details.
So we'll do leg press, squats, same squatting. Right now I've got a bit of a dodgy back, but when I'm fully healthy and I'm squatting my heaviest, probably 200 to 215.
That is absurd. That's like, that's over double your body weight, surely.
How much do I weigh? Probably 90? Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah. That's unreal.
And then leg press, probably 350 each leg.
So I can single tell leg. You're happy with your numbers, aren't you?
Yes and no.
Because you're a slight guy also.
Yeah, I'm quite skinny. So a lot of people think I can't lift heavy, but I love going to public gyms. I love it. Every time I go to a public gym, I put the weights on. Everybody starts staring at me like, oh, what's he going to do there? And then, yeah, I've had friendly competition one time. He wasn't friendly, but he went in some competition, so I gave it to him and he didn't like that I won. But the weights are, that's what is the killer for me, is getting into the gym and pushing them weights.
Because those are the days also, the day after when you hurt. How about time on track? How important is that in the lead up to the games?
It's important and it's not important. It depends what you need at the time. We also do work off the track. So it's like a flat road like this. We have a tarmac road next to our BMX track. We have a timing system and we call it sprints. and 60 meters long. And we do maybe two or three of those every session to obviously spin the legs and make sure we can keep up with our gearing, because our gearings are not massive. And it's easy to spin out and lose control of your legs, and you're not really going anywhere, you're just pedaling for the fun of it. So we do a lot of sprints, and then track work is making sure you're getting the backsides of the jumps, and then the, you have the gait. Gait is probably the hardest bit of a BMX race, because that's where it all starts, and depends whether you're going to be starting last or first. There's a lot of technique and time and effort that goes into having a perfect start, because once you're on a start, it's a random. So you hear the sequence, and then the lights go from any time between zero to maybe, I think, 1.8 seconds. Oh, no, 0.8 wow. seconds.
So it's quick.
Yes, but it's always random, so you can never kind of process or try to judge when a gate's going to go. And then you're on the gate with seven other people, so they can mess up and have an early start and hit the gate, which can affect your gate. Or they can
there's
have
so many different factors going on.
Yeah,
it's crazy. What's the mindset going into Paris?
As of right now, it's just get out of the gate and just be aggressive. Whether that's taking people off or cutting people off and making sure you get into the first turn first.
It's so savage, because it's not like mountain biking where you go down one at a time and you're just trying to beat a time.
Yeah.
You're literally in a battle of people. How many people start at the moment?
So there's eight on a gate.
Eight on a gate.
Yeah. And only four qualify each race.
It must be really surreal to be in that position within a sport where you're not in control of your destiny. It's everybody else that's around you.
Sometimes you can, like, you could be chilling in a race. Like, a race is only maximum 32 seconds, 33 seconds. You go into a turn, you're in second, you're in qualifying position, you're just chilling, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm qualified here. No need to take the guy out in first. Because the only time you really need to win is in the final. Unless you want a better gate pick for the next qualifier, so you make sure you try and win. But yeah, you could be chilling in second, that guy goes into a turn and his tires slide out and you go into the back of him, and then your day's done as well. And you're just chilling thinking, yeah, I'm qualified.
It's so brutal.
Yeah.
I am so looking forward to seeing you race out there. I watched a few of your runs this morning, and I've commentated on you rising a few years ago before the last games. And without a doubt, you are fast and aggressive, and I cannot wait to see what happens. Talk to me a little bit about the changes you've seen in your hometown since your success of that silver medal.
Oh man, it was brilliant. The amount of kids turn up the next day after the medal, I think over 50 to 60 new applicants the next day. I had some old friends, some old people that used to do BMX come back and wanted to ride for the first time again. Yeah, it was brilliant, man. It's the club, the local club, Peckham, is getting, I think it had maybe over 100 new riders sign up from Strider bikes, from, I think, from 2 years old to 18 plus. So it had a great effect, and that's what I was kind of aiming for.
Does that fire you up looking to Paris, that you could have that same effect again on that next generation?
I hope so. That was my plan the first time, and that's my plan this time, just to get people out there and get BMX more out there and get people on the BMX track.
That is so, so incredible. How have you seen the club in itself also change since your success? I mean, to come home and have your own mural, Kai White, Prince of Peckham. Like, that's not normal.
No,
things aren't normal.
Yeah, it's not. It's not.
But they are your normality.
Yeah. Do you know what it was? I still don't believe it now. I had my own portrait in Peckham. It's been taken down now, unfortunately, but
there's still one up.
Yeah, there's still one up. And then obviously on the side of the track, it has my name, Kai White, Olympic silver. Like, everyone that drives past sees that and they know, oh, that's where Kai White's from. And if they know about BMX, and oh, that's where Kai White's from, and yeah, he's Olympic silver. And then just the amount of new kids that have joined. As I said, that was the aim of me going out to Tokyo and doing what I've done. Just getting more kids involved in BMX. We need more numbers, we need more people involved in BMX, we need more television, just everything to make the sport bigger, be better.
What's it like now when you go down to the club and the reception you receive?
Still the same when I wasn't at Silver. the kids are cheeky, man. The new kids are like excited and they're happy to see me, and then the old kids are still being cheeky and little rugrats. Nah, it's all love, and it's a great environment. They think they're better than me at 10 years old. I always give them a little race with no pedals, and yeah, they get smoked. So
it's official that both you and Beth will be returning to your second Olympic Games together. You two are quite the power duo. Take me to the moment which was printed on the front of every British newspaper of you carrying back see your friend, fellow teammate, clinch the gold.
Do you know what? I was more excited for her winning the gold than I was for myself winning the silver. We're so different. I'm chilled, I'm laid back. And if training doesn't go well, it doesn't go well, it is what it is. I get on with it, and the next day, it's a different day. Whereas Beth, if training doesn't go well that day, she asks why it didn't go well, and she might get upset. And before the game, she got upset quite a lot. And I was having to give her hugs and say, listen, Beth, you're fine, you're going fast, this will happen, you'll be fine. And it was fine. She went there and obliterated everyone and won. Yes, watching her win, I was like, oh my God, she's actually gone and done it. So it was amazing. And when I picked her up, she just couldn't walk. I said, Beth, there's no one here to celebrate, so you have to celebrate. She's like, I can't walk. I said, at least just walk to the finish line when there's cameras and everything and everyone can see, instead of laying on the floor like a sloth. And she's like, I can't walk. I said, come on. I just picked her up. Yeah, that's the picture that went crazy,
how
I guess.
Unreal. It was everywhere.
Yeah.
But to think also, it's similar to rowing, I believe, in that endurance capacity is in when you're done, when you cross that line, you're tanked. Right?
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
nothing left.
No. For us, we're not endurance, so we would never train endurance. As soon as we do a lap, everything's in that lap. All of our energy, all of our power, just everything goes into that one lap. So as soon as you finish, the lactic acid that hits, it's like, oh my God, I need to breathe. And yeah, your legs are jelly, obviously. And then her obviously winning, probably in shock as well. Yeah, there's no wonder she couldn't stand up. So
how would you describe that feeling at the end of a race when your legs are so gassed, you can barely walk? Is it a sense of relief or is it an addiction?
It depends what race, because obviously we do more than one race in a day. So in a normal race day, we'll probably do about 8 laps if you make it from the start to the finish to the finals. It's about controlling how each lap goes and how much effort you put into each lap, so that when you do reach the final, your legs ain't completely gone. But in Tokyo,
it's a slow build strategy.
Yeah. So as I said earlier, sometimes you just chill in second instead of pushing to try and get first. You're qualified in second, so you just kind of chill and you let your legs relax. Sometimes you need to, just put everything into it. But Tokyo also was a super long track. So as I said, normal tracks are probably about 30 to 33 seconds max. For the girls, Tokyo was 40 seconds, and for us, the track was 38 seconds. So Beth, she was absolutely totaled.
Full.
Yeah.
Full gas.
Yeah,
no, she was totaled. No gas left at the end of that one. Kai, we like to ask all our guests on the Monday Mile podcast what their relationship is like with Monday, the start of the week.
I actually don't mind Mondays because...
We like you even more. Welcome back to the podcast.
I don't mind Mondays. It's Wednesdays and Fridays and Thursdays I don't like.
Why?
Because the start of the week, you're fresh.
Right. You've done that gym session.
Yeah, until you do them gym sessions.
200 kg weights. Yeah.
And then by the end of the week, you're like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to wake up and turn up today. So, yeah, Mondays is probably the best day. And then when you get to the end of the week is when...
Wednesdays and Fridays are leg days, yeah?
Yeah.
The life of a BMXer. And lastly, Kai, what would you say to somebody looking at your success? They're from Peckham.
Yeah.
They're 5 years old.
Yeah.
And they are daring to dream to emulate your career.
Go ahead. I hope you do better than me.
Yeah.
I really hope you do better than me. Because I was the same five-year-old, so yeah. Go ahead.
Go get it.
Go get it, man. There's only one way you can do it, and that's by chasing it.
Kai White, thank you so much for joining us here on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. We want to wish you all the very best of luck.
Thank you very
much. Out in Paris. Absolutely go and smash it.
I will do.
Come back with a bit of hardware. And then I'll take you for a snowboard lesson afterwards.
Wicked, I can't wait.
Monday Mile listeners, it is a wrap. You know what to do. Do make sure you subscribe on YouTube. We do drop the audio every single Monday morning at 12 a.m. for the early risers. So make sure you get your headphones in and head out for a stroll with us. It's a wrap.